Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy football advice, speculation, and whatever stupid stuff they decide to drop into the show. Now here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to a springtime edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. It's only spring for another...
Spring
3 weeks. It's just barely spring here in Minnesota.
Yeah, we're talking. It's more like feels like autumn today.
When I woke up this morning, 33 degrees.
Yeah,
you know, what?
I thought it was week five when I woke up today. I was like, yeah, we got to be breaking down some matchups,
right?
But not yet.
Yeah, it's yeah. You can never trust Minnesota. It was 85 degrees 2 days ago, and it was 33 when I woke up this morning.
I struggle when the temperature shifts like this too, with like allergies and stuff. I don't know about you, but I hate it.
I understand you struggle sexually with these big temperature changes, and I guess, you know, it's nothing to be ashamed of. They got pills for that. On this edition of Fantasy Football Weekly, we will, performance problems here, I don't think. We will break down the relevant rookie tight ends, of which there are only a couple, honestly. We're going to touch on five, but some of these are going to be very short because I don't think they're very relevant. But we'll maybe spend at least that much time and maybe more on the two big stories that affect fantasy football that have come up this week. And the first is Aaron Rodgers, who does not show for OTAs, which is not really a surprise and really helps validate what has already been widely reported about Rodgers. And he's in Hawaii boozing it up. I mean, you know, he's living a good life right now.
He's mastered the, he looks like Jake Gyllenhaal in Nightcrawler too. He's got like the nice, like greasy, like slick back.
I don't
know. He's living his best life, I guess, however he deems that. But yeah.
Well, then his life is pretty good.
Looking a little greasy.
That's all right. I want to talk through fantasy value for Rodgers and projecting this right now for people that are drafting now in best balls or whatever. Man, he's at a heavy discount, and I think it's a mistake. Let's talk through the three realistic scenarios for Aaron Rodgers. Number one, he stays in Green Bay, where he is scheduled to make $90 million over the next 3 years. 90.
Yeah.
Now, you can be the host of Jeopardy, and you can do okay. You can do a lot of things in life. It is... so hard to make that kind of money for anybody. He's doing the one thing that he can do that can pay him the most money is to be quarterback. And staying in Green Bay still has a lot of possibilities for him. It's not like he can absolutely whine his way out of town. And if the team plays hardball with him, there's a great chance he'll crack because he wants the $30 million a year that he wants to make. So that's scenario number one. And in that scenario, his fantasy value remains every bit as high as it would have been if he stays in Green Bay. Scenario number two goes to Denver,
yeah,
where they have a far deeper set of receivers. They don't have anybody as good as Devontae Adams. But you get Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy and Noah Fant and a couple of running backs who can catch a bit.
I like Tim Patrick too, man.
Throw him in there too. Aaron Rodgers' fantasy value could be even higher in Denver than it is in Green Bay. That's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
So in two out of the three realistic scenarios, he still has high fantasy value. Then I'll give you the third, and I think it's the least likely realistic scenario. Retires. He just says, you know what, forget it. I've made enough money. I'm going to be comfortable for the rest of my life. I don't want to play for Green Bay. I'm out. I think it's very unlikely that he walks away from $90 million. Like, never in the history of sports has anybody walked away from $90 million.
Right.
So, I don't believe that that's a realistic scenario at all. You know, and if he does that, you know, sure, you'd be screwed. But what are the odds that the retirement angle is like 10%?
Oh, I would, at most. But, I mean, maybe a little higher if Green Bay, they were a contender last year, and they should have won their playoff game when they kicked the field goal down eight. With like, still, obviously, we don't have to revisit that. But, so highly doubt he retires. But we want to talk about the ripple effect for the Packers skill players if Rodgers leaves. I mean, we have Devontae Adams, who's wide receiver one, wide receiver two, one or the other in most people's minds. Aaron Jones is a top five, top seven running back as of right now.
Yeah, he's going in drafts between the end of the first and the middle of the second round.
Those two bump down around easily if Rodgers leaves.
Yeah, I agree.
And a guy like Robert Tonyan got a lot of love right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's borderline undraftable if Aaron Rodgers leaves, I feel like. He's going as a top 10 tight end right now.
But okay, let's play that out for just a minute, though. If Aaron Rodgers goes to Denver, which I think is by far the leader in the clubhouse, if he's going to go somewhere.
Agreed.
If he goes to Denver, there's a good chance that Drew Lock comes back to Green Bay, or maybe Teddy Bridgewater goes back to Green Bay, where there is quasi-competent quarterbacking. Not great in either case, but quasi-competent quarterbacking in each case.
What are the chances? I've seen crazy ideas thrown out there.
Yeah.
Where Denver trades not only for Aaron Rodgers, but Davante Adams too. And then Green Bay gets a Lock or Teddy Bridgewater or both of them.
and Cortland Jerry Judy Sutton or Cortland Sutton.
One of those guys.
Yeah, maybe. They could get younger at the position.
They can make it work. Those two teams, it seems like they can make it work. I don't have the exact cap numbers in front of me, but they both got the pieces.
Long and short of all of this about Aaron Rodgers. Draft him. Take the discount and draft Aaron Rodgers. There's such a high probability that he ends up in a fine landing spot. Chip on his shoulder. I don't think it's realistic to suggest he won't play. And if he's playing in Green Bay or Denver, he's going to be fine.
Agreed. And what you need to be worried about or somewhat worried about are the Green Bay guys, Davante Adams, Aaron Jones, Robert Tonyan.
Yep.
Drafting them now, knowing
there's
their
more
value
risk for them.
Could die
more,
big time.
I agree.
And then on the flip side, a guy like Cortland Sutton is going way too late already, even if Teddy Bridgewater or Drew Lock is his quarterback. But buy low on him right now, and that stock goes through the roof if Rodgers goes to Denver, obviously.
Agreed. All right, let's talk Julio Jones, confirming a story that we talked about last week. At this time last week, it was more in the rumor mill that Julio Jones was possibly leaving Atlanta, so we talked about it a bit last week. Well, now it's been confirmed by Julio Jones, whether or not he knew he was on national radio or not. It looks like he's going to be leaving. Then the team will try to facilitate a trade. Now, the team's lost some leverage because of Julio coming out and saying he's requested a trade. Nevertheless, let's talk about some of the landing spots, Brian. Tennessee is the one that's most connected to him because it checks all the boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Quality quarterbacking. They already have another good wide receiver there, A.J. Brown, that would take some of the heat off of Julio Jones. He doesn't have to carry the whole receiving offense. Plenty of volume would still be there for Jones. And you have a win-now team for a veteran player who wants to go to a winner. He doesn't want to go to a rebuilding team. Julio Jones doesn't.
Well-balanced offense, of course, with Derrick Henry.
Yeah, maybe overly balanced in the minds of some. I mean, it is a run-first orientation. Tennessee had the third lowest passing play percentage last year.
You think they would change that philosophy if they brought Julio Jones
in? Right. I mean, Julio Jones is good for 5 extra percent.
We want to crap all over Corey Davis, but in this sense, we can. He's no Julio Jones.
He's no Julio Jones.
And never will be.
Yep. It just as a quick side note. Man, Julio Jones has played hurt as much as any position player over the last 5 years. Dude is so tough. And and he's been so productive despite the injuries. And last year was really the first year where he missed a lot of time. In previous seasons, Brian, he was hurt a lot. Dude played through it.
Yeah,
and he usually played pretty well.
Yeah, he had he's played at least 14 games.
In virtually every year.
Almost every year. In 2013, he only played 5 games. And last year, he played in 9 games. And those were the only 2 years he finished under 1,000 yards. I'm sorry, he finished under 1,000 yards as a rookie. He only played 13 games that year. But Julio, he's 32. He's definitely on the tail end of his career.
Yeah, but that's not ancient
either. No. He's got some gas in the tank.
He does have some gas in the tank. The other landing spot he's widely connected to is New England, where he becomes the obvious go-to receiver, easily topping Nelson Aguilar and Jacoby Myers and Kendrick Bourne. The obvious question mark here would be quarterback, right? Mac Jones will need time to develop. Cam Newton sucks. And so that's the, you know, that'd be the question about, you know, who's getting him the ball and how well is that guy getting him the ball. For Jones, who might otherwise say, like, no to try to fight a move to New England, you're going to the most successful NFL franchise in the last, 25 years, and Bill Belichick's there. So, you know, he may accept that. He may accept that as a landing spot.
One other, we'll call it a dark horse, but Arizona's been thrown out there too. And there is a picture of Julio, DeAndre Hopkins, and AJ Green at the Pro Bowl a few years ago. And they supposedly were like talking down the line, we should all play together one day. But I don't know if that will happen.
They're
but that
so
would be,
deep a receiver. There's no way, including hitting the draft with a mid-round pick at the position. I don't see that happening.
No, they probably have to send like Rondale Moore, who they just drafted, back to Atlanta with maybe Christian Kirk. Yeah, that's fine.
So where I've got Julio Jones right now is wide receiver 17, which factors in his age, the, you know, the injuries that seem to be mounting on him, and the fact that I don't know where he's going, and it may be a less desirable spot than Tennessee or New England. Does that sound about right to you, Brian? Wide receiver 17 for Julio Jones?
Yeah, right about now. And just ranking the staying in Atlanta, which is really not going to happen, but let's just do it anyway. But I would say number one landing spot, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Staying in Atlanta. Although,
okay, wait. Stop right there.
Okay.
My number one ranked wide receiver is A.J. Brown.
I understand. And that doesn't change for me.
Would that change? Would that not change anything for you?
I think it might just make him make the case a little stronger for wide receiver one. For AJ. I would not be upset if Julio. A lot of people would be saying, oh, my God, Julio Jones now. A.J. Brown's not going to produce as much. He might produce more with Julio Jones.
I think he would. I think he would get less, fewer targets, but better targets because defenses couldn't just double and triple A.J. Brown like they can now.
Right.
And so I don't know that I would. I'm kind of with you. I don't know that I would move A.J. Brown out of spot number one. But part of my rationale in putting him at spot number one was the 160 targets that he might get in that offense.
One would assume he's looking at that kind of volume. And he only had about 100, a little over a tick over 100 targets last year, and the numbers he put up were top 10. Yeah. We all know if he gets that volume to the moon.
If you were starting a new NFL franchise, what receiver would you pick first right now?
Or if we're just doing a dynasty draft, right? Yeah, it's A.J. Brown, pretty much. A.J. Brown.
A.J. Brown, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
knowing what we know, there's some guys, maybe they usurp A.J. in the next year or two, but he's the one I'd go with.
Justin Jefferson is in that conversation. CeeDee Lamb might be in that conversation, as young, really talented receivers that, and you know what we got to do? Maybe we'll do it next week. We should do a podcast on second-year rookies that we think can blow up. That can be far better than they were in year two than they were in year one. And it doesn't mean that they were bad in year one necessarily, but guys that we think can take a big incremental step up, like a CeeDee Lamb, who right in his second year. So these are all, and the reason it's so salient this year, no OTAs, no mini camps, no training camp, no preseason games for all of these rookies. So a lot of guys that we thought that would be more productive than they were have in their second year this year, roll into OTAs and mini camp and training camp and preseason games and are going to explode in year number two. I think there's a bunch of rookies like that.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, let's do that next week.
Maybe Matt will do it, though, not me.
Yeah, well, that could be. Something I should know? Scheduling thing? Or no? Okay. No.
Well, if the weather keeps shifting and my problems keep... I wasn't aware of that. That's still alarming to me, but we'll talk about that off air.
Let's go to the tight ends, the rookie tight ends. We're only going to cover the tight ends taken through the top three rounds. Yeah. I don't think any of the other ones are probable helpers without getting some serious breaks that go their way. From a fantasy standpoint, and not even these five guys are all helpers. Let's begin with Kyle Pitts. I don't want to spend a ton of time on him because everybody already knows a lot about Kyle Pitts at this point. I think the most salient part of the conversation is how, and we were talking about Julio Jones. So, you know, let's assume Jones leaves. What do you think Kyle Pitts can do this year is the biggest question. We know everything suggests long-term he's going to be awesome. And in a dynasty format, he can be your starting tight end for a decade. What do you think he can? What's a reasonable assumption for Kyle Pitts this year?
If Julio leaves, he's essentially going to play wide receiver because they still have Hayden Hurst, and he's going to be the inline blocker. He's going to be the more traditional tight end, and Kyle Pitts is essentially going to be running wide receiver two opposite of Calvin Ridley.
Right.
And before this whole Julio drama, there was a ton of love for Kyle Pitts. In redraft alone, he was like tight end 4 or 5 after the big three? Was like people are taking Hockenson or Pitts. Is it too early now, though? Under the assumption that Julio...
Yeah, it is.
Is it?
For me.
Well, we all know that...
In redraft, it is.
The horrific history of rookie tight ends.
It's brutal.
One?
So let me... I got some...
Oh,
okay, good. All right, go for it.
I'm going to quiz you here.
All right, thanks.
There's been one rookie tight end in the history of the NFL to have over 1,000 yards and more than 10 touchdowns. There are two rookie wide receivers that have double-digit touchdowns. But who has had 1,000 yards and double-digit touchdowns? Only one.
Jeremy Shockey.
No.
Oh, I thought it was going to be Shockey.
He had two touchdowns.
That was it? Okay.
He had the second most yards, though.
Okay.
894.
I knew he had a good year.
He did. 74 catches, 894 yards, only the two touchdowns, but for a rookie tight end. And, you know, he was not on your fantasy team or anyone's fantasy team. The correct answer. It's Mike Ditka is the answer.
Oh, it's Ditka. Okay.
Ditka in 1961.
Right.
In 14 games, nearly 1,100 yards and 12 touchdowns.
Yeah, that's insane.
But modern era, there's virtually no production for rookie tight ends. Gronk had 10 touchdowns, but he had like 500 yards. He was mm-hmm. just so.
The
history
average,
is not on Pitt's side.
The average season for first round tight ends going back to, I believe it's 2000. And these numbers are going to be close, but not exactly correct because I don't have it quite in front of me. The average numbers for the season totals is right around 30 catches, 300 yards, and two touchdowns for first round tight ends. So for Kyle Pitts to be tight end 4 or 5, he's going to have to be like threefold, fourfold better than other first round tight ends. And maybe he will be. I'm not saying it's impossible, but as high as we are on him, remember, you know, we were high on TJ Hockenson, and he's going to have a great career, but it's just the tight end position just takes time.
Agreed. But, okay. In Dynasty, though, Superflex, I'm not taking Pitts first overall in a startup mm-hmm. or in my rookie draft, but he's the first non-quarterback off the board for me.
I have no problem with that. No problem.
Unless I'm sitting on Darren Waller or something like that. But yeah, if I'm not holding a guy like Waller or
Kittle. What if you're holding Kelce?
Yeah, sure.
Who's now, Kelce's starting to get long in the tooth.
No, I would take Pitts. I mean, he's arguably going to be the most valuable asset moving forward, and Kelce's still extremely valuable, so if your team goes kind of belly up, you move Kelce. No problem drafting Pitts with Kelce on roster already.
The second tight end taken was Pat Freiermuth, and he's an interesting guy that people don't know nearly as much about, but I think he's got some real potential to him. When we broke him down before the draft, we talked about the nickname he had picked up, Baby Gronk. And I'm like, you know what? A million guys have been called Baby Gronk. But the reality is, he really is kind of a Baby Gronk. I mean, he physically and stylistically is really close to Gronk. He's incredibly physical, just punishing potential tacklers. He's got good ball tracking skills, and he is a basketball player turned tight end. And a lot of times those guys do have good ball tracking skills and good hands, which he's got. He gets open. He can shake defenders, and he's an excellent blocker. He is a great fit. Now, he went to Pittsburgh, Brian, which means that I think this year he platoons with Eric Ebron. Mm-hmm. And it means I think he's not going to be all that startable this year. But Ebron's on the last year of his deal, and Freiermuth's going to be the starter beginning next year, and I think he'll pay dividends at that point.
I agree. But yeah, this year I'm a little worried about Pat, especially in the red zone with Ebron, because I would still think they utilize Ebron majority of the time in the red zone in Pittsburgh this year. But like
yeah,
you said,
this year, yep.
He's got a bright future. He's got top 10, top 12 tight end potential moving forward for
yep,
sure.
Pat Freiermuth way off people's radar. And in dynasty rookie drafts, you're going to be able to get him deep in the second round, beginning of the third round. And I'm telling you, I think that he's got the upside. Now, I can't tell you who the Steelers quarterback is going to be next year. That worries me a lot because it's not going to be Ben. No. We're going to talk more about my disdain for Steelers this year in a future show. The next tight end taken was Hunter Long, who went to Miami. This is not an ideal landing spot.
No, Hunter Long out of BC in the third round, the 81st overall pick by the Dolphins. Kind of a head scratcher because Miami drafted Mike Gesicki in the second round just 3 years ago, and he's evolving into one of the better tight ends in football. The Dolphins also have Adam Shaheen, who they kind of like, who's like third-round pick by the Bears they traded for. But Miami must really like Hunter Long out of Boston College. He does sound like a well-rounded tight end, a good route runner, good hands, a really good blocker. Miami supposedly wants to utilize like a two-tight-end formation, but he seems like the more inline blocker of the two between Gesicki, or even if Gesicki's hurt, I trust Adam Shaheen more as a pass catcher at this point. So zero redraft value.
None.
And just still dynasty going forward. He's behind Mike Gesicki.
Yeah. He's not going to beat out Gesicki. I watched a lot of Hunter Long. He is a good tight end. He's just, I saw nothing special about his game. They threw to him tons at BC. He was the focal point of their whole offense. But he's a guy who he can't like run away from anybody. No. He can't get a lot of separation. He was just kind of a guy to me. And he doesn't have nearly the skill set that Gesicki's got. So I just don't see anything here for Hunter.
Yeah, he needs injury to pave the way for him. And that might even be in year two, year three, year four. He's going to be a helper in reality football, but not so much in fantasy.
Let's go to the next tight end taken, and that was Tommy Tremble, who ends up going to Carolina. Nothing to see here. This is a pure run-blocking tight end. He was PFF's top-ranked run blocker at the position, and that's the end of it. I mean, where the people who are affected by Tommy Tremble going to Carolina are Christian McCaffrey and maybe Sam Darnold, who, gain a good blocker. That's it.
Well, and he's blocked by Dan Arnold, too, so he has no
that's
future.
That's great. Exactly.
Dan Arnold's not
also
trembling.
That.
There's no tremble because of Tommy.
No, there's not.
And Dan Arnold's knees.
Okay, and then, lastly, the final tight end taken in the third round was Trey McKitty, who ends up going to the Chargers, where Chargers lost Hunter Henry. He's got an opportunity here to develop in that system. What are your thoughts on Trey McKitty? Who ends up going, by the way, his projection was like round six. It was a bit of a surprise move for the Chargers.
Well, I might not be the first one to dub him this, but I'm going to call him Trey. Hello, McKitty. That's his nickname.
Oh, I like that. Hello, McKitty.
6'4", 245, pretty athletic, but he's pretty raw, too. Mm-hmm. Very limited production at Georgia last year. He transferred from FSU, did not put up big numbers. He's a project. Right now, he was drafted for his blocking skills. He'll have an immediate role as an inline blocker, most likely, with L.A., but the potential to make an impact through the air is not going to be there this year. He's been called a body catcher, which is not good. Catches the ball with his body. Very limited route tree. But the Chargers do see a lot of upside in him as a pass catcher, so zero redraft value, but a guy, if fifth, sixth round in my rookie draft, if I got a spot and I'm thin at tight end.
At six rounds in your rookie draft, you'll take anybody with a pulse. And, but that's what it would take.
We love the offense moving forward for the Chargers. But don't forget Donald Parham.
Yeah.
Of XFL fame, who came on late last year when Henry was hurt at times. And, of course, Henry gone now. He's the starter this year.
Right.
Don't get that twisted.
Sneaky late round sleeper right there.
In any format. Yeah. Yes. Keep an eye on Donald Parham because, the Chargers, they're going to be a fun team.
All right. So next week, we cover second year players who we think have the chance to get a lot better in year two. And that would mean guys like Zach Moss, who I think is in a position to potentially get a lot better in year two.
I've held strong onto Zach Moss, man.
Yeah, good, me too. But it could also be Justin Jefferson's going to go from being runner-up for Rookie of the Year to being a top seven wide receiver, as an example, if you think that's coming.
And maybe my boy Eno Benjamin will get a carry.
Wouldn't that be nice? You loved Eno Benjamin at this time last year.
My first Devy player did not go well. A couple years ago, I took him as my first Devy player. I made up for it last year by taking Kyle Pitts
as a
Devy player. Yes.
Wow, all right. I had no idea who Kyle Pitts was at this time last year.
I barely did, but
you knew enough.
I knew enough.
Good for you. And then after that, I think we start getting into breaking down every division and just talking through the four teams in each division and everything you need to know about those teams from a fantasy standpoint as we start at this point, we're almost into season preview territory.
We're getting there.
Yeah, it's getting close. We're like T-minus 100 days from the start of the regular season.
And we have plenty of Twitter video to break down of weird exercising done topless by all the players. Oh, yeah. The dog days of summer. Yeah. So enjoyable.
If you like Guillotine Leagues, we are now open for our 2021 season of Guillotine Leagues at guillotineleagues.com, and we encourage you to check that out. It is the coolest, funnest way to play fantasy football, period, end of story. Most of you already know this. You start with now 18 teams because there's 18 weeks of the season now, and every week one team gets cut, and that team's entire roster goes to the waiver wire where pandemonium ensues. It is so much fun. We encourage you to check that out.
And we'll talk about it more, I'm sure, on the Chop podcast, but a new exciting format, too.
Yes, we do.
On the horizon. Yep, lots of new. Bigger money. Bigger money.
Yeah, for those that want to play bigger
won.
Stakes.
Not to be paid, but to be won.
Yeah, yes. Hopefully that is the case. Thank you for listening to Fantasy Football Weekly. We will be back next week for more, hence the name Weekly in the title. We'll be back next week for more. We'll talk to you then, everybody.
Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.